Hi, I'm Leola. I'm a sacred intimacy mentor and muse and the host of this podcast. Talk Tantra to Me introduces a playful perspective on sacred sexuality. My intention in this podcast is to integrate intimacy and spirituality, empowering you to reclaim your eroticism. It is my mission to inspire you to let go of shame, fear, and limiting beliefs to be present as your highest self in every moment. Thanks so much for tuning in. Now, let's talk Tantra. Hello, lovers, and welcome. I want to start off by saying I am so blessed to be in a position to suggest tips and tools and even products that can help you lead a tantric life of liberation and expansion. And one of my absolute favorite places to purchase spiritual and sexy items is Wands. Wands.com, spelled W-A-A-N-D-S. Wands sells, you guessed it, crystal pleasure wands, along with so much more, including yoni eggs, free bleed blankets, other amazing products for yoni steaming. I've been using these products and products similar to them for the better part of a decade, and they have been incredible allies in my journey of sexual healing and expanding my orgasmic potential. And I'm so grateful to be friends with the owner, Courtney. She's amazing. She has so generously provided us all with a discount code for 15% off, and that code is LEOLA. L-E-O-L-A. You can use it on their website, www.wands.com. Again, the code is LEOLA, L-E-O-L-A, for 15% off. I'll also make sure that this is linked in the show notes. So thank you for listening, and you're welcome for the inevitable pleasure and healing that is coming your way with these products. Now let's get into the episode. Welcome to Talk Tantra to Me. It is such an honor to be holding space for this divine knowledge to make its way into your ears and lifestyle. Today, I talk Tantra with Lauren Auer of Steadfast Counseling. She is a trauma therapist specializing in EDMR, brain spotting, IFS, somatic regulation, and religious trauma. I'm especially excited about that last bit with religious trauma. I know a lot of listeners, and myself included, have a bit of religious trauma, especially in, you know, relating to our sex education and also just a lot of fear-based narrative when it comes to spirituality and religion and our bodies. And so we're going to be getting into some of those topics today, which I'm very excited about. So I'm so grateful for Lauren and her content and so appreciative that she's here on the podcast to offer her perspective of living an expansive life. So thank you for being here, Lauren. Why don't you start by telling us a bit about your journey with becoming a trauma therapist? How did you discover this passion and purpose?
Yeah, I would say that it's kind of always been in me from a young age. My grandfather was a therapist, so I just kind of had this idea in my head that I would do that too, because I resonated a lot with him. But, you know, my journey got jumbled around a few times. In college, I did switch paths to go into communications and then criminal justice. I was just kind of all over the place, mostly because the amount of schooling I would need to be a therapist totally freaked me out, but I just kept coming back to it. And, you know, I ended up really, the big thing was when I was a criminal justice major, I ended up in an internship at a juvenile detention center. So kids that had been, you know, done really, you know, serious enough crimes to put them in like a jail setting. That's where I was interning. And it was really eye-opening, especially to me, just with how much trauma these kids had and how that really at the time wasn't being addressed much, if at all. It was very secondary. And I just couldn't shake that. And it's really what propelled me to be like, okay, fine. Like, thank you, universe. I will go back to grad school and what I know I've been wanting to do my whole life. So that's how I ended up there. And yeah, my career is just kind of put me in settings and places where trauma has been the main thing. So I worked with you know, juvenile sex offenders. I worked with victims, child victims of abuse in their families. And then I worked in a women's domestic violence shelter as a counselor, and then as a therapist in the division that had all the counseling for sexual assault and domestic violence. And we would, you know, go to court with people. We'd respond to calls at the emergency room when somebody came in because something had just happened, an abusive situation, to be there during like that evidence collection portion. And I ended up becoming the clinical director of that agency. And that was really great. And I loved it. And then I just 3 years ago now, I think, yeah, 3 years ago, I jumped off on my own and opened my own practice. And that's really kind of been the main focus of what I've been doing ever since. So,
wow. Thank you for sharing that background. It sounds like you've really seen some pretty shadowy parts of humanity. And interestingly, like for me, I came into my work in a similar way where I kept feeling called to this like exploration of sexuality and spirituality. And it wasn't until I went to India and I actually was there. I used to do freelance writing work and I was working for a nonprofit that freed children from sex trafficking in India. And it wasn't until I was there in that space where I finally got over my whole ego story about what it meant to be in this work that I realized like it's bigger than me. And this is something that I get to do and is a why for me. I continually come back to that why. But I'm curious, with seeing what you've seen, how do you cope? Like, how do you like continue working with people and have faith in humanity and like have so much to give despite, you know, the atrocities that you've witnessed or been intimate with because of the clients that you've worked with?
Yeah, that's a great question. And honestly, it's because it works. Like I see the healing. Like I see like people just find that freedom and break free from all of that. And even the stuff where I've worked with people that are abusers or have done terrible things, you know, even seeing that end of things of, you know, understanding that those people are people too. And that there's, you know, obviously a lot of healing that needs to be done and a lot of hurt that has been done. But, you know, those people are capable of understanding their own patterns and their own behaviors as well and finding healing. And it works. Like I wouldn't do it if it didn't work, if I didn't see it. And that to me is just, it's the best job in the world because I get to see all of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And where does this take you today? Obviously, you have all of these different modalities of like thing like EDMR and brain spotting and the somatic work. So what does your practice look like today? You said you started your own practice 3 years ago, which congratulations, by the way, that's amazing. I'm curious, like what, like if you could give people an idea of like what your process is now for working with people, what are some of the options, stuff like that?
Yeah. So all of those things, like you mentioned, like somatic based therapy, and that includes things like brain spotting and EMDR. Those are like specific modalities. And really that kind of all encompasses the body in healing, you know? And so at least when I was in graduate school, I don't know what it's like now. But a lot of therapy, education is around, you know, how you think and the brain and your thought processes and, you know, talking about things. And I think when most people picture therapy, they picture two people sitting in a room talking, right? Talking about what happened, talking about all these things, which does happen, obviously. But when we're talking about trauma specifically, especially the type of trauma that I've worked so intimately with people, you know, sexual trauma, domestic violence, even, you know, stuff that happened like pre-verbally, you know, all of that, you don't have words for that all the time. And when you're experiencing something really intense and really overwhelming, your thinking part of your brain, your prefrontal cortex, sorry, the parts of your brain that can tell a story, that can talk, that can use logic and reason, when you're experiencing something super traumatic, that part of your brain is shut off. Like, you are not in that part of your brain. You're in the survival parts of your brain, which is the instinct to be safe and to whatever that may look like. For some people, it's to fight back or to run or to freeze or to, you know, play nice and fawn in order to get through it. Like, those are the parts of your brain that are lit up. There isn't logic, there isn't reason to it. So if you're talking about healing from trauma, but you're using the parts of your brain that weren't even online when it happened, then there's a lot of barriers to mm-hmm. what healing can do. So a lot of the clients that I see are people that have maybe done a lot of talk therapy in their life, or have done, tried other things, or maybe even self-help stuff or whatever. And not that that stuff hadn't worked or doesn't work, but there's still like a stuckness of, even though I know XYZ, I still get this like intense, overwhelming feeling when I'm in certain situations, or, you know, my body just shuts down when something's happening, or whatever it is, to where they can't. There's like some stuckness that's happening there. And that's usually because the parts of their body that actually were most impacted by the trauma haven't yet been brought into the healing process. And so that's where, you know, a lot of the work that I do with like brain spotting, EMDR, somatic stuff is really addressing the nervous system and mm-hmm. getting deeper into the body. There's movement involved there. There's energy, like all of that is, it's kind of just like talking the language that the trauma talks so that it can actually heal.
Yeah. There's a quote. It's like the brain can't outthink what the body is feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, when, and at the end of the day, like we feel things before we think them. And so, you know, when we're animals, and when an animal is like, goes through a traumatic event, like gets, you know, like a gazelle that gets chased by a lion, it doesn't go and talk to its therapist. The first thing that it does is it shakes its body and it moves the energy out. It moves out the fear, but we've been so conditioned to suppress our emotions and, you know, condition that it's not okay to cry or to make noise or even to laugh too loud. So we like move around in this like tense, contracted state all the time. And it really is like a repatterning to come back into our bodies. And I love that. I love that you use the somatic methods. I think that that's so incredible. And I'm happy to see more and more therapists doing that as well. But mm-hmm. that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd love to say, so one of your offerings I saw on your website was this walk and talk therapy as well. And I wanted to bring that in just because I think that it's so unique and cool. And it just feels very personal and also like probably has a bit to do with the somatics. I'm curious, like, what does that look like? Where did that come from?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, part of it is I'm just really lucky in the location that I have. It backs up to this. It used to be a golf course, but it's been shut down for many years. And so now it's just like a nature area that anybody can walk. It's open to the public. There's like a pond and paths, and there's some like sculptures and different things. So it's really beautiful, and it's literally right outside my door. So part of it's like, I have to take advantage of that, you know? But yeah, I think it's just, I always, when having hard conversations with people in general, like especially when I'm talking to often like a parent and they're like, how do I get my teen to talk? Or I have to talk to them about this really hard thing. And I'm always saying like, okay, do it when you're on a car ride, because you're not making the direct eye contact. That kind of takes some of the pressure off. You have a captive audience. There's less distraction. Or when you're on a walk, same thing, you know, and that's even better because then you're outside, you're in nature. There's that grounding element. And when you talk about like these somatic modalities with the like the EMDR brain spotting, there's like a bilateral stimulation is a big part of that. So it's that lighting up the left and right side of the brain. So you're not, that's really getting you into your body, whereas you're just talking, you're really only using one part of your brain. So again, walking and having that like left and right back and forth just naturally happens. You're not even thinking about it. It just is, you know, your whole body is activated while you're talking. And so there is just this like extra added element of healing that can happen there. And so when I do walk and talk therapy with people, I usually just, it depends on the weather and stuff, but you know, we just walk around out in that nature area and it's pretty private. I mean, there's, we run into people every now and then, but it's very much just like going on a walk with somebody and having therapy at the same time. It's great.
Mm-hmm. I love having people on the podcast, such as yourself, that have like an education around the science behind why some of this stuff works. Like I know that walking and talking therapy makes sense because it feels good and I can like feel that in my body and I can maybe give a spiritual or like emotionally grounded reason for why, but hearing about the science of like, it's lighting up both parts of the brain. It was like, oh, it's so interesting. Yeah. Super cool. So one of the things that you focus on now is religious trauma, faith crisis. I'd love to branch into that. I have a few questions about it, but mm-hmm. I'd love to just see where we can go with it. If you don't mind just sharing a little bit about your work with religious trauma to start. Sure.
Yeah, I kind of stumbled into it accidentally. In fact, it's kind of funny. So I personally, a little bit of my own background, I grew up in the church, just very much evangelical, big mega church scene, you know, is what I grew up in. And that was really all of my upbringing. And then even my grad school was a Christian university. And that partially was just because the location and the program was really good. It wasn't just because of that. But, you know, most of my education had a big element of that infused into it. And then, you know, in adulthood, I don't know exactly timeline wise, but was super involved in a church community for a while. And just a couple years ago, it was after I opened this practice. So this practice, Steadfast Counseling, I initially opened it with like more of a faith background. And wanted to kind of branch into working with people that were also believers and people that weren't. But like that was just an element that was kind of, I guess, infused in what I thought was going to happen. And within, I don't know, the year probably that I opened it, which I opened my practice in 2020, technically. And at the time, there was a lot of upheaval in our faith community that we were in. And so external things going on, but really a lot of internal things going on for me too, of just my own soul searching and like, wait, that didn't feel good in my body hearing that being said, you know, or that, you know, certain topics that were brought up or things that just, I kept getting this like reoccurring kind of feeling, of like, I don't agree with all of this. And it wasn't like, I don't believe in God or anything like that. It was just, there was a lot of things about the setting and the interactions and the values and stuff that were just really not sitting well with me. And I started to really think, I think more critically about the things that had just kind of been, you know, given to me as this is what it is my whole life. And there was a lot of things that stuck and there was a lot of things that didn't stick. And, to the point where, you know, conversations were had and it just got kind of, it wasn't contentious at all. It was just like, you know, I think it's time for me to move beyond this community. And so that was really hard personally, because that was, you know, my entire social network. That was my entire, like, family, like all of it. It was very much intertwined into everything I did. And even so, it never felt wrong to walk away from that, because it was, I just felt very like aligned with what I felt to be true and most aligned with who I am and how I think and how I see the world and other people. And it's funny because when that was happening, or since that's happened, only a couple years, the amount of clients I've had just without even trying, like that were or are going through similar things or have gone through similar things, Like I never advertised that until probably more recently. It was almost just like it was coming up with other people so often in the therapy we were doing and all of the things that were interwoven within their own trauma and the other reasons they were in therapy. And, you know, it just became this topic that for whatever reason, the universe was sending these people to me, you know? So it's something that then I did end up doing a lot more, you know, additional research on and my own work on and stuff like that, just to like, there's something here, there's something happening here, that there's this through line here that, you know, it's kind of just become accidentally something I specialize in. So.
Yeah. And I mean, it's definitely needed. And I'm not surprised that once you like started experiencing that yourself, you vibrated a bunch more people your way, because yeah, it's definitely something that we need in the world, and that so many people, whether they know it or not, have a little bit of trauma or a lot of trauma around their religious faith and the belief systems that are like entwined in them. And I have to say, it just takes a lot of courage to like walk away from those communities, especially when it's like, you know, your whole family and friends. And yeah, that's super tough. So my heart goes out to you for having the courage to do that. And then now becoming a leader in the space and being a pillar in the community for, you know, transformation and healing. It's so, so powerful. For me, I grew up in the Midwest in a small town, pretty religious, and that definitely impacted me. But I always had this, like, even as a child, like watching, and my grandma was Baptist. I also went to Catholic church a bit because my stepmom was Catholic. And it was like, I would hear the things that they would talk about. And it's like, you know, Jesus doesn't judge, Jesus loves everyone. But then there's also this like judgment, you know, judgment day, and this, and feeling this like, this just like, this is so contradictory. And like, I don't understand how some of the things that we're saying are wrong, because that's not how it feels in my body. Even as a child, I was very tuned into that. And so it made me feel like I was bad. I was like a bad daughter, a bad Christian, because of the questioning that came up. And it wasn't until I was in college and I moved to Chicago and I was like separate from my community that I finally really let myself be in the I don't know if there is a God. I think that there is, and maybe I can get curious about it. And then I read Conversations with God, which is a great book. If you haven't read it, I recommend listeners Conversation with God. It's like there's four books, but the first book alone is just amazing. And it was like, this is what I've always believed. Like, it felt like, oh my God, finally someone is like speaking to me about what God is in a way that like I've always known in my body. And it felt so nourishing and relieving that, okay, like I can now feel supported by divinity again. I can feel my higher self. I can feel spirit. I can feel a higher power, but it doesn't need to be one that feels limiting and that I'm going to maybe go to hell and like all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And then there was like another layer for me around readjusting my relationship to like Jesus. Like, even after I went through like letting go of religion and really taking on spirituality, I still had this like harsh judgment towards like people that were like talking about Christ consciousness and Jesus codes. And, you know, like there's a new wave of Christianity almost in the spiritual communities as well. And I was super resistant to it until I started to learn about Mary Magdalene and like her true story and her being the counterpart to Jesus and really looking at what were his original teachings and who was he as a man. And now I feel a lot more complete. While I still don't consider myself religious, I do find a lot of value in some of the religious stories and the teachings, how that they were meant to be in their most pure form. Mm-hmm. So I kind of just went on a whole thing. I don't know if you have any thoughts.
That is, I think, a lot of people's story. That a lot of that was my own experience as well, of like I said, thinking critically. It's like I went beyond that layer of people just saying this is what is true and this is how we do things, to me asking questions and researching and like, wait, but like, who was Jesus? And like, how does this work? And what about this? And like, actually looking at that stuff and like, you know, making up my own mind and learning myself about things. Some of it was really interesting and wonderful, and other things I was like, wait, this is completely different than what I've been taught. And, but it feels so much more aligned and less fear-based, you know, to be living in that space. And to, and I'm definitely still on that journey. You know, I don't think it's somewhere that people necessarily arrive at as much as it's like ongoing, and how that fits into spirituality and, you know, how I move in the world and how I sit with people in healing and all of that. Like, it's just, it's like all of the healing type therapeutic work I've done has been like amplified now that there's that like greater understanding that goes beyond that. It's just really, it's amazing.
I think it's really beautiful too, how you've alchemized the trauma that you had with religion to actually be a better servant in your work as well, a better servant leader in, you know, the setting that you work in. And I find it's also really important to recognize that there's so, there's such a broad spectrum of what religious trauma can look like. And I would say even mine was like pretty mild compared to some of the others that you see. I'm kind of obsessed with watching documentaries on the more like culty religious communities and the ones that are just super traditional. And I think that they're, I don't even want to like say that these, I don't even want to have like a broad, like, I don't want to put out a broad statement that I think that all of these religious communities are damaging or toxic or are bad or wrong. I think that they actually all have some really beautiful beliefs that I even resonate with. And some things work for some people and they don't work for other people. Yeah, it's really, it's just super duper fascinating. And I think that even if you weren't raised in a specific religion, it's also considering like the people around you that were religious and might have imparted their judgment on you and projected their stories onto you and having the trauma of being like received in that way. And then there's also a whole other layer of that is supported by the studies of epigenetics that, you know, show that we're holding the trauma of our ancestors. And that's a whole other conversation. But if we think about like how intensely religion has been woven into our society and our worthiness and even like our safety in the past, like there have been many, many, many times throughout history. And even today, like right now, people are fighting about, you know, these things and persecuting people and killing people because of their religious beliefs. So if we think about like these topics on the collective scale and on an epigenetic scale, it's like there's a lot of shit that is that we're exposing. And it's my belief that like we're in this time in the collective consciousness where a light is being shown onto the most shadowy parts of our humanity, and it looks really bad on the surface. Like you turn on the news and it's like, this is like, the world is getting worse. Mm-hmm. Or like, it can be really easy to get stuck in that. But I truly believe that it's like, it's because of this unique time in history that we're able to actually expose all of this stuff. And we're so empowered now on an individual level, like, to walk away from your religious community even 30 years ago was probably so much harder because it was harder to meet other people and we didn't have the internet and it was harder to find like-minded people. And of course, the internet has its shadowy dark corners as well. But I think that I choose to see that this is like a time in which we're shining the light on the most shadowy corners of humanity. And this exposition is integral to our evolution, and we can still hold space for a more equitable future for everyone. And also see, like, if we're on the other side of like zooming out and seeing what's really going on, like we get to be the leaders in this and share this realization of empowerment and, you know, becoming your own guru in this way. Cause I think that that's what a lot of religion is with the fear-based rhetoric, is like, how can I control people? And that's another like rabbit hole, but I just kind of went on a little tangent. So see if you had any thoughts.
Yeah, no. And I think it's important too, like what you said about, you know, like all of the, you know, cult documentaries and the podcasts and stuff, because I love watching that stuff too. Or, you know, you hear the stuff in the news about some major, whatever you want to call it, like a celebrity pastor or whatever, like, doing really abusive things that are uncovered. And like that, that's absolutely valid. And there's a lot of that coming out and stuff. But also, I think a lot of the work that I do with people too, and what can be even more confusing is that, like, I guess, quote, like subtle stuff, the like, I don't know. I think a lot of people think, oh, I don't have religious trauma because I wasn't like abused by a clergy member, or, you know, I didn't have money embezzled or whatever it is, you know, but there's so much, even it's just like those little things, those little, you know, ideas that were indoctrinated that can be really traumatic. Or, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about like purity culture and like the trauma that comes with that. It's not necessarily somebody even intentionally or with ill will putting that indoctrination onto you of like, ooh, this is really going to screw with them. But like, it's traumatic, you know, like, in fact, I think a lot of times there's things like that. Those are talked about and preached thinking it is a good thing. And this is for the better good. And like, there's actually positive intent in it, but without, you know, understanding the repercussions of that, or like allowing there to be space for curiosity and conversation and exploration and, you know, questions and all of that, then it can be really confusing and really traumatic to not feel like you have a space to talk about that and to make sense of that and think critically about that.
Hello, lovers. Please bear with me for a brief interruption with a vulnerable share and offer from my heart. So when I first began my journey with spiritual intimacy and sacred sexuality, all I could afford were books and free podcasts. I was just out of college in my early 20s and honestly very, very broke. And I'm so grateful for all the complimentary, kind words and affordable wisdom that have gotten me where I am today. Price shouldn't deter you from healing. It shouldn't deter you from living the life you love or from reclaiming the most powerful energy in your body. It's my belief that time and commitment are also very powerful investments, especially when you're just dipping your toes in the water. You'll know when it's time to make the bigger cash investments in your journey, but let's begin together today with free love from my heart to yours. As you've already discovered, this podcast is free and it includes so much life-changing wisdom, but I'd also love to guide you to some free offers that are on my website, including a downloadable sexual shadow work workbook and a pleasure positive meditation. Both of these resources are amazing places to start in integrating the tantric principles of expansion and liberation into your life. And you can access these at www.talktantratome.com/free or find a direct link in the show notes. Now let's get back to the episode. Such all really, really, really great points in this that religious trauma can look so many different ways for so many individuals, and in a lot of the instances, it can be quite subtle, and can also be as simple as like I'm questioning a belief, I'm questioning the authority, and even just not being able to be received or heard by the community. That's huge. Mm-hmm. I'd love to also pivot into specifically religious trauma and like the sex education around, you know, it like in these communities, because I know for a lot of religions it's like sex is only okay under very specific circumstances, and often it's also like for the pure intention of procreation, and anything outside of that is like gonna be a cause for damnation potentially. Mm. And like, what does that create on a collective scale? So I'll let you, if you have anything you want to add to that, I have all kinds of thoughts about it, but let you lead us off.
Yes. Oh man. Well, I mean, I just, again, speaking from my own experience growing up in like an evangelical community, you know, I think that the way it was taught to me was very much fear-based and very much, like you said, like abstinence only until marriage. And, you know, if you don't, then here's all these terrible things. And, you know, that is, again, I feel like there is oftentimes, you know, positive intention in spreading those messages, but it's very confusing when, you know, you enter into a marriage, for instance, and like all of a sudden, wait, I've been told my whole life that once you're married, sex is supposed to be this like beautiful, amazing, like wonderful thing. And how do you go from yesterday, you're going to go to hell if you do it and it's going to be terrible, to today, it's going to be the most beautiful, wonderful thing ever. And wait, like, no one told me how to do it or like mm-hmm. what to do, or like, I thought this was supposed to feel good. And I, you know, like, it's like, it can be very confusing for people, to like reset their mind to that. And even just like, even taking that another layer further of putting so much, you know, I guess, power around that thing specifically, and like gendering it with, okay, if you're a girl, you have this like magical power that you have to protect, and like, you know, you have to be careful with how you're interacting, how you're dressing, how you're, you know, engaging with people, because that could make somebody else stumble, or it could be tempting. And like, what does that say about you as a human? And like, that you have this power to cause other people to do bad things. And it's like this tool, you know, and there's no emphasis at all, at least in my experience. I can't speak for all of everybody, but around like that, you know, there's a world in which sex should also feel good for me and I can enjoy it. And like, I'm a human with a body that gets to feel pleasure as well. And it's not just for somebody else, you know? And so, but if that's never spoken about, it's very confusing, you know, trying to wrap your head around what that actually looks like, you know, why might people be struggling with sex or enjoying sex? You know, I have those conversations with people all the time in therapy of, you know, like not feeling comfortable with sex, or feeling like they want to ever have sex, or that they can enjoy sex, and they've just never been given the context for that. And it's really sad. It doesn't have to be that way.
So, yeah, I totally agree. I think that even some of the teachings around sexuality that are, you know, teaching abstinence, I'm not even like upset about. I think that there could be a lot of beauty mm-hmm. in the like invitation to wait for a special person. I think that it's for some people, not for everyone. It definitely wasn't for me in the end. And it's the pairing of the fear that really it, like, and the lack of information, just the complete like leaving out so many important pieces. And especially what's like sad to me is that I see like sexuality and sex as a way to connect with God, as a way to get closer to God. Like, what would happen if we started to see our whole life as a spiritual experience in which, you know, we're getting closer to God by seeing the procreative world that we live in? I mean, like, there are things around us constantly, you know, procreating everything. Like, we're all created by sex. Every plant and animal is created by sex. So like, what would happen if we saw like how intertwined these themes are and celebrated it, instead of trying to shut it down? And I mean, it's hard to say like for sure how we got here. And I think that by and far the people that are continuing to perpetuate this like narrow view of sexuality that often has a fear-based like tone over it. I think a lot of them like really do feel like this is the answer and this is going to help people. And I think in some ways it has helped people. If you look at like, I mean, I think that it's one of those things that like maybe it's helped with some sexual violence. Maybe it hasn't. I don't know. But at the end of the day, I think that most of the people that are in these that are perpetuating these beliefs really feel that it's like the right and the true thing. But I think on a bigger scale of like where religion has come from and how intertwined it has been with the government over the years, it's like the government's main intention is to corral its people and in a way, you know, to control them, sometimes for our safety and sometimes for their benefit. And, you know, sexuality is such a powerful energy. What better way to control people than by making them afraid of the thing that might be a secret to their empowerment? Mm-hmm. So that's been a big reclamation for me, is instead of giving my power, both my like untangling my sexuality from beliefs that don't serve me, that belong to someone else, but also seeing myself as my own like guru and spiritual leader and teacher. And yes, I think that there's a bigger oneness outside of me as well, but I know that I'm directly connected to that and I don't need a man in a robe to connect me to that. Right. That's been my story on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think that there's definitely, you know, it seems like, at least in my experience, the goal of those sorts of narratives were fear-based around, I think people are afraid, okay, well, if you teach kids and teens about sex and what it is, and they like, you know, watch MTV or whatever, and like all of these advertisements or certain movies, or they see porn or whatever the case may be, then they're just going to like go wild and they're going to, you know, just be really sexually open, and that could be really damaging or whatever. So we're just going to make them afraid of it or put this in their head, which maybe that works, but like also,
what like, could work better?
Yeah. I mean, they're like, that's the way, at least because I'm a parent, I have two young boys, so we're not really having those conversations yet. But like when we do, I want them to know like the reality of the situation. Like they're going to see the advertisements and they're going to see porn inevitably or whatever, you know, like they're going to hear that stuff. They're going to be exposed to it one way, shape or form. So why not just be truthful about that and also give them the education around like, and also like, you know, if you're choosing to be really free sexually at a young age without understanding exactly what that means, like here are some of the emotional repercussions that could happen with that. And, you know, like just like think critically about it and be smart about it and come to me with questions about it instead of being afraid to, you know, it seems like that's a better way to get that positive outcome. But like, I don't know, like the government didn't ask me, like no one asked me, but it seems like, you know, it just doesn't work to place so much fear and shame around it, because that's what ends up happening, is there's a lot of shame that gets created in that kind of an environment around there's something wrong with me because maybe sex feels good. And so then like, I was told that that's not supposed to be the case. So like, what is wrong with me? Or, you know, I think humans physiologically are going to have sexual feelings. They just are. And so if you're taught that you shouldn't, then how confusing is that? You know, mm-hmm. Wait a second, like I can't tell anybody about that or what's wrong with me. And then it just gets put into like silence and shame. And then that has so much harm and impact on our bodies physically, as well as our relationships down the road. So, yeah.
Yeah, I really find that a lot of this stuff is ground zero to like a whole host of other, yeah, you know, like problems in our lives or like anxiety, depression. Like there's just so many things that come from like these roots of shame and fear and guilt, mm-hmm. that a lot of it stems from, you know, religion and sex and mm-hmm. both of them at the same time often.
Right.
So people, and I have a couple of things that I want to touch on before we wrap up. And one of those is if you are like feeling, if someone's listening and they're like, I'm feeling like it's time for me to develop my own, you know, faith or separate from my current faith, but feeling a lot of fear around the perception of their family and their community and things like that. Like, how would you recommend, or like, what advice would you have for people that might be in that situation and how to move or to evolve in a way that feels like safe and also gives them the freedom that they know is possible?
I mean, I think number one, just for people to recognize that it's okay to think like that. Like, again, you're a human, so you have free thought and you should be curious about things. And if something doesn't feel right or there's confusion around something someone says or does, like, you should get curious about it. And, you know, I think, like you mentioned, that you found a book, you know, that was really eye-opening to you. And I was kind of the same way. And some of the, just the research I did, of instead of having that initial instinct to be like, no, I shouldn't question this, or I shouldn't feel that way, to like, just let yourself be curious. And there are so many wonderful books, podcasts, you know, people, whatever out there, therapy, to, that you can just ask the questions, or, you know, even just individually journaling it out, like in your own time, to kind of figure out how you actually feel about it. Anytime there's any of those feelings that come up, not to ignore it, like it's there for a reason. And that doesn't necessarily always mean, okay, then they're going to, like in my instance, I ended up walking away from my faith community and stuff, but that doesn't have to be the outcome, you know? And I mean, I see clients that are clergy themselves or very involved in faith communities still, but still have questions about certain things either they're currently experiencing or have in the past. That doesn't mean that they necessarily need to walk away from that belief system. It could, if that's what they choose or the path that they're led down, but it doesn't have to. Because I think, at least, again, my own experience, there is also fear around that that is often put into people's heads around, like, well, don't ask questions, or like that is like a sinful thing to be questioning certain things, you know. But that's just, it's instinct. Again, going back to like the body, like we feel things before we think things. So that's what I was noticing a lot sometimes sitting in the church I was a part of, is I would have these more like visceral kind of body, like feelings. And it wasn't like I was sitting there logically going like, I don't agree with that, and here's why. But it was just this like, I don't know. And then like, I followed that and I, you know, let myself do the wondering and the research and the reading and the whatever and the self-reflection and all of it to figure out where I actually stood on things and how I feel is most aligned with myself. And that does, I would still say that I believe in a higher power for sure. You know, like I don't know if I would necessarily call myself like a Christian, but it's not like I'm this like raging atheist or something now, you know. It doesn't have to be that way, you know. So I would encourage people to, number one, just get curious in their own time. And then when it comes to other people, I think if they've done the work to get curious and really think through some of that stuff, some of that inner work, and like allow themselves some time to sort through that and hopefully find resources or a therapist or friends or whatever that they can feel safe to talk through all of that stuff without any judgment, then at least for me, you know, there are people in my life that are definitely very, very strong believers in a religious space still that I know disagree with me on certain things, but like I kind of don't care because I've done all the work to feel aligned in what I believe and where I'm at. So it's like, I'm not really looking to change anybody else's mind. And I'm not really open to anybody trying to change my mind either, because I've focused on that inner work. So, and I feel like it's pretty peaceful to be around people that think differently than me too, for that reason, because it's not a threat. It's not, I'm not going in there looking to, you know, state my case or to change anybody's mind or whatever. And if somebody wants to engage with me in that way, I'm just not open to that. So it's, I'm not upset about it. I get why people might want to engage in those conversations with me, but I just don't need to have them, you know. I'm just like, okay, you know, and it's just, I guess, the boundaries around that. But, you know, I think it depending, like if somebody is very aggressive about it or something, then there's some probably boundaries that would need to be put in place around that. But, you know, sometimes that's very much worth it.
Yeah, I agree. There's lots of power in approaching anyone with a different belief than yours, whether it's someone that's a family or friend or a new individual, to be in the energy of good for you, it's not for me, and mm-hmm. and kind of moving on from there and having those boundaries available as well.
Yeah, well, for myself too, like I just approach like everything with curiosity now. Maybe that's because I had a lot of time in my life where I didn't, that like, even if somebody's telling me about, I don't know, this isn't real, but like, if they're like, hey, I'm a part of this religion where we believe in like the magical spaghetti monster in the sky, I'd be like, tell me more about, I'm like so curious about it. Not that I'm like, you know, I want to do that too, but I'm just so, even people with like very different beliefs than I am, I just feel like I look at the world now with so much more curiosity and acceptance of like, I want to know like what it is about that to them that makes them excited. And I think that's great, you know, even if it's completely different, as long as it's not hurting anybody.
I agree. The world needs more curiosity. Curiosity mm-hmm. is such a powerful intention to meet the world with. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much. Is there anything else you want to share today? Or would you like to tell people where they can find you and support you and follow you?
Sure. Yeah. Let's see. Want to share today. I have some things that I'm working on that's not out yet. So I guess just stay tuned. People can follow me. I'm most active on probably Instagram, and that's just at Steadfast Counseling. And then I'm also on TikTok at The Every Therapist. I'm like trying to think like, what is my handles on things? I don't know. And that's, those are pretty much the ones that I use. I have a website as well. It's all linked in there. But I mean, I try to post, you know, I don't know. I just try to be pretty open. I don't stick to any like posting schedule or anything, but I get inspired sometimes by things that are brought up in conversations or various sessions about certain things that I just want to like get the information out there to people about trauma, about healing, about all of that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's where people can find me.
Amazing. We'll definitely link all that in the show notes as well. But thank you again, Lauren, for joining me today. And I also want to express my gratitude to the listener. Thank you once more for opening yourself up to the idea of religion and sacred sexuality and faith crisis and all those good topics that we dived into today. With so much gratitude and love, have a sexy and spiritual day. And I'll catch you next week on Talk Tantra to Me. Ta-ta. Oops, just kidding. Still here. I have one last thing for y'all. I want to say that the internet is a really, really special place. It's why we're all here right now. And many of us, including me, wouldn't have discovered Tantra or sacred sexuality if it weren't for this nifty invention of the 20th century. And almost none of you would have found my work and my vision without it. I love the internet, and I deeply desire to expand beyond it, to experience more real life, love, community, and connection. So I invite you to check out upcoming Tantra events at www.talktantratome.com/events or click the link in the show notes. I can't wait to give you a big squeeze in real life. Okay, now that's it. Ta-ta for real. Ta-ta.